This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, let's welcome in the voice of the Dallas Mavericks, Chuck Cooperstein. After the Mavs get another dominant victory, they win 13 out of their last 16, and we look ahead to tomorrow's Christmas Day action after the beatdown of the Trailblazers. It's the G-Bag Nation, Eric Chiafalo, alongside the Super Bowl-winning scout Brian Broaddus, Lucius Alexander in the Pimp Cup, and Carter Freeman's running the fan cam Twitch and YouTube. Great to have you in. Merry Christmas, everybody, as we welcome in Mr. Chuck Cooperstein. Chuck, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. How the heck are you, man?
It's all good. Going to be a whole lot better in Mavs land right now.
Yeah. Things are coming together nicely, very nicely. Last night was super impressive. I mean, they just tear up these Trailblazers. That's what they do. But everything's clicking right now. The health of Luka, no question about whether he plays tomorrow, right?
No. I mean, he's back. And I mean, I haven't seen the injury report for today, but it's not like he was taxed or anything like that last night. And, you know, he played 30 minutes, which is, again, well below his average. And that's all well and good. It's part of the real strength of this team that there is incredible depth. You know, for years, it's always been talked about, well, we've got depth. We can do this and we can do that. And then, you know, you get toward the end of the season, you try to pare down your rotation, you know, to 8.5, you know, maybe 9. And you know who those players are. Well, you know, here, you don't know who those players are. Yeah. And it really could come down to, you know, who they're playing at a particular time, the players that are in the rotation. And it's a wonderful problem for Jason Kidd to have.
Chuck, is there a thought, and you were talking about the depth, does Jason Kidd play with the lineup in a way of when guys are available and guys are not available that maybe that we might see with, you know, with Kyrie and Luka both being out of a game at the same time and seeing how those rotations and stuff work? I mean, would he take the season to do things like that?
Well, we saw that the other night.
Yeah.
That didn't go very well.
No.
You know, and so I can't imagine them doing that on purpose.
Okay.
Unless you get the game 81 and 82 and everything's already decided.
Sure.
And that's what happened last year, you know, against Detroit and Oklahoma City at the end of the year. And it didn't matter. And so they sat those guys out. But if there is anything to play for, I can't imagine, unless they're both injured,
right,
that they won't play. And then, so you're going to have at least one of those guys.
Yeah, it just seems like to me that this coaching staff is such attention to detail in the way that they operate and stuff like that. And they're like no stone unturned type of a group. So I just didn't know if they're like, listen, you know, tonight let's think about this, or let's think about with the way the schedule plays out for you sometimes.
Well, I think, again, you look at a team like the Clippers, whose record isn't particularly good, but they did go into Memphis and win last night.
Yeah, they did.
They did beat the Mavericks in one of the two games in Dallas. I mean, they're the type of team, you know, they're probably going to make the playoffs. They're athletic and long, and they've got some bulk in the middle. It's hard to score against them. It really is. And, you know, the Mavericks didn't score easily against them in either one of those games, even with Luka, you know, coming back, or right. Luka, you know, well, Kyrie was back. Luka was out for both of those games. But when they didn't play, that was a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, it's one thing to have depth, and depth is a wonderful thing, especially in the regular season.
Right.
But it's not like you're just wanting to play with food just to play with food. Right. Okay, that's not a good thing, especially when you do know that as things are as tight as they are, and you see where the Mavericks are in relation to Houston and Memphis in the standings right now.
Right.
I mean, you've got to make sure at the very least you have a top four seed, and preferably you'd like to be in the top two or three so that you can avoid the top seed, likely to be Oklahoma City, for as long as you possibly can.
Chuck, are you more surprised of, well, Houston forever, it seems like, always had young talent, but not the coach to go along with it. And I mean, no disrespect to the coaches that have been there before, but now they have that. Are you more surprised by where they are or where Minnesota is?
That's a good question, Brian.
Because Minnesota's 10th.
In fairness to Stephen Silas,
yeah,
who was there before Ime
exactly,
Udoka,
yeah,
he was given a bunch of AAU players.
Sure.
He was not given Fred VanVleet,
right,
and Dylan Brooks to bring a sense of professionalism to them, and Steven Adams too, for that matter. So you know, that's, I really hate, because Steven Silas is my neighbor, quite frankly,
right,
here, and I'm good friends with him, and he's a hell of a coach, he really,
yeah,
is, but he was not given the means by which to succeed. Having said that, Ime Udoka is a hell of a coach, and he has Dylan Brooks and you know, Fred VanVleet to execute his mindset that then translates to, you know, other guys, and, you know, like guys like Tari Eason and Amen Thompson, guys you don't even talk about, right? But they're unbelievable. Okay, they're unbelievably athletic, and they're a pain in the butt to play, as we saw when the Mavericks played them very early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to next week on New Year's night, when most of the world's going to be watching football and watching the Sugar Bowl between Notre Dame and Georgia. You know, I'm going to be in Houston watching the Mavericks play the Rockets, and it's going to be a hell of a game. It really is. But Minnesota, you know, they made a big trade, and sometimes it works, like it did with the Mavericks last year, okay? Sometimes it doesn't work, like with the Mavericks when they got Kyrie. You know, it didn't work right away, not necessarily because he and Luka didn't work, but it just, the team just never quite got together. And it seems like Minnesota, you know, their defense is still really good. Like, their last 10 games, they're the best defensive team in the NBA right now, and they were the best defensive team last year, but they can't score. Their offense is just all messed up. I mean, they're working on a streak now of, I want to say it's something like 10 straight games where they have not even scored 110 points.
Mm-hmm.
And in the NBA today, that's almost impossible to do. So there are some real issues there that they've got to get figured out. It's not easy for them because, frankly, you know, Randall plays differently than Towns, and that changes the spacing on the floor. And Mike Conley, as much as I have loved him through the years, he's gotten old, and they don't have a legitimate backup point guard. They don't have anybody who can go get them a bucket, other than Anthony Edwards, who is now having to do all kinds of things and doing different things. He's shooting a bunch of threes, not driving the ball anymore. They're kind of messed up. I mean, they've lost three games in a row here, got beat by Atlanta last night, and the games before that against New York and Golden State, they've been smacked in all three of those games. You know, they're all over the place right now. Houston is definitely not.
No, Houston's pretty legit right now, for sure. It's Chuck Cooperstein, radio voice of the Mavericks, with us here on The Fan. Where would you like to see the Mavs start to improve here, other than just remaining healthy, building that continuity? What areas of the team need to be improved as you start looking ahead towards the rest of the season?
Well, I mean, I think the backup four probably needs some looking at now, you know, whether that is already on the roster with Kleba and Prosper, or whether they feel the need toward the deadline to try to find another person, you know, who can fill that backup role better behind PJ Washington. That, you know, that's something I think that can be looked at. I think, you know, just from an overall standpoint, They've been a little loose with the basketball over the last month, a little bit better the last couple of games, but they really just need to sort of buckle down. They've been looking for a lot of those home run passes to try to beat the defense down the floor so you're not playing against a set defense. And sometimes discretion is the better part of valor. And rebounding is always going to be an issue. And they've been playing a bunch of teams here lately that are really good offensive rebounding teams. And they've been hurt a bit because of that. And that's, you know, just something that, you know, I think, you know, when you have Luka back at full strength, that really solves a lot of the problems because he is such a good rebounder from the perimeter. So, yeah, I think that can definitely help too. So there isn't really a lot, I think, that they've got to worry about, you know, given not only their record, but how they played, where they pretty well dominated people.
Is Kyrie even better than he was last year?
I'm sorry?
Is Kyrie even better than he was last year?
Kyrie has been sensational. And I tell you that where you don't maybe appreciate Kyrie so much, and you saw it against James Harden the other night, and you saw it last night when Jeremy Grant was trying to post him up and try to play bully ball with him down the block. When Kyrie wants to guard, you know, and he's really, you know, he's being challenged by people. I mean, he's going to get his chest into you, and he's going to make it hard. And that he's doing it in game 28 of the season, as opposed to, you know, just waiting until the playoffs to start doing it, is a great sign. And obviously, Luka's defense has been so much better this year. And not that it was ever really as bad as people wanted to make it out to be, and especially, you know, with what happened in the finals. But he's much better on that end this year. And I do think that, you know, if your best player is going to try and play the way they're playing, then that's going to pretty much trickle down to everybody else on the roster, and they're going to try and do the same thing.
Chuck, when I was working with Bill Parcells, and the one thing he always was talking to us about was, you know, your team by Thanksgiving, you understand where's the NBA point of, you know, your basketball team. Is there a date for that? Is there basketball folks say, hey, you'll know your team at this time?
Well, most teams will say basically from 25 to 30 games, but there's always the caveat of the trade deadline.
Right.
And what do you do with the trade deadline? Football, it doesn't really work that way. I mean, it's better now in football than it was as far as acquiring difference-making players. But even at that level, there are so many other players in football. Right. That have to play in order for the team to win, that unless you were getting, you know, a franchise quarterback, I don't know what material difference, you know, making a trade week 10 of the season is going to make. In the NBA, generally speaking, even at the trade deadline and afterward, there are very few trades that ultimately become difference makers. You know, you may improve on the margins, but there's nothing that really, or rarely, that materially changes your team. Last year was obviously the exception with the Mavericks, because right, their two trades clearly changed everything. But I would say, generally speaking, 30 games into the season, you pretty well know who you are. So that's basically about 38% of the season.
Chuck Cooperstein with us here on The Fan. Chuck, obviously a lot of conversation just generally around the NBA right now with the ratings down, and people are trying to change the game, too much three-point shooting. Well, what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I mean, I don't mind three-point shooting at all, as long as the guys taking three-pointers are the ones who are capable of making it. You know, there's a lot of times when, you know, teams will come down and be three-on-one, and in the past, you know, the ball handler was getting it to the foul line, the guys are running the wing, and they're going to the basket, and you're throwing a pass, and they're shooting a layup. Well, now they're flaring out to shoot a three. And I'm not sure that's always the best play. But having said that, I mean, the players are significantly more skilled than they've ever been. They really are. I mean, despite what the naysayers would say. But, I mean, I look at a team like the Mavericks, and, you know, you compare them to last year, they take fewer threes than they've ever taken. And their threes are better, quite frankly, because they're doing so much damage in the paint and at the rim, that there's so much space now for them to shoot. and they got a whole bunch of shooters on their team who can make three-pointers and make them at a, you know, a better than NBA average clip, that, you know, you should wind up taking them. So you should wind up taking about, you know, 35 threes a game. That does seem to be, you know, the right number for this particular team to take. You know, there was a great article that was out this morning, that, kind of just tried to, and I posted it on Twitter, kind of explaining, you know, how, while, you know, the results may be, you know, where they are, that there are so many different ways that teams use to get to that particular point, that, you know, those who say, well, the game, everybody's doing the same thing all the time, just jacking up threes, there's a lot of intricacy in how that works. You know, I think the players are great. And I do think that the game is great. I think the officiating could be better. Mm. I mean, clearly, I think it could be better. I pretty much believe we can probably say that in all sports.
Yes.
But I do think the NBA has an issue that they really do need to deal with and don't put their head in the sand. I'm not sure they're doing the best job they could in that area. The issue of load management is something that is never going to go away, I think, and it does turn people off, and they should be turned off by it. I mean, you can talk about how the game is so spread out and it's more difficult to defend than it ever was before. Well, then you just got to prepare for it. And maybe I'm too simplistic in that way, but to me, you know, you owe it to the fan base that's paying a really good price for their ticket, let alone whoever is going to watch the game on TV, that if you can play, you should play. And then, you know, you do have the TV issue, and the TV issue is a major one, because it's almost as if the NBA has made it harder for fans to watch their teams, you know, with blackouts on League Pass and, you know, the new contract coming up that's going to send a whole bunch of stuff to streaming. I don't know if this is the best long-term strategy for the NBA, but they obviously believe that it is. And I guess starting next year, we're about to find out.
Chuck, before we let you go here, you've always been my voice of reason when it comes to college athletics. Your impressions of, and not so much how the games were played, but how did you feel like the first weekend with the 12 teams involved? How did that go for you?
It was spectacular. Oh my God. I've been dreaming of this ever since I started watching college football, which is basically about 50 years ago, right?
And right.
It was incredible to see a late December game at Notre Dame.
Right.
And I think the fact that the tournament began at Notre Dame just lent a greater aura to it than it already had. Mm. You know, and you're at State College, and you're at Ohio State, you know, and you're at Texas. It's my goodness. If you're a college football fan, you just can't get enough of it. It was, as far as I was concerned, and I know, you know, the NFL put two games on Saturday, and you know, one of them, the Steelers and Ravens, is arguably the best rivalry that the NFL has right now.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And I had absolutely no interest in watching that game, none whatsoever. And I'll admit, my college and the NFL leanings are pretty much 50-50, maybe even a little more toward the college game than the NFL. I'm the French Foreign Legion when it comes to the NFL. I have no dog in the fight.
Right.
You know, once the Jets moved to the Meadowlands, I was done with them, mm-hmm. and that was the end of it. But I can't imagine how great it was. I mean, I thought it would be. It was even better. The reality was better than the dream. And then, you know, you get to the next round, and frankly, I think it's a bit of a letdown by going to the bowl sites.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, it's like they basically need there are two things that need to happen. Obviously, they need to seed honestly. You know, you win the conference, that gets you in the tournament. That's fine. That's great. Mm-hmm. But you don't deserve a top four seed just because you won your conference. You got to seed it honestly, and then you have to reseed. after every round, so that your top seed, whoever the committee decides the top seed is going to be, that top seed is protected. And that should happen, you know, and it does happen pretty much at all levels of sport, except really for the NBA, which is really kind of nuts when you think about it. But you do those two things and then ultimately get to a point where everything is on campus until the championship game and you have a college Super Bowl. You know, look, the NFL is a $25 billion a year business. You can learn from this. There's something that they must be doing right. And there's nothing wrong for college football to emulate what the NFL has done as far as the seeding of the playoffs and playing the playoffs. And then ultimately, you know, having a Super Bowl, say on a Saturday night, someplace that, you know, because college football is meant to be played on Saturday, and that would absolutely be bonkers. It would be spectacular.
Well, Chuck, you're a super beast, man. Can't thank you enough for the time. Happy holidays to you, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Appreciate you guys. Take care. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas to you as well. Happy Hanukkah. Walchuk texted me right now just to let me know that he's kicking his feet up and watching Wedding Crashers. It popped up on the TV.
Why is he not watching college tape? He's got some scouting report. We got a couple weeks before the draft show starts right up here.
I'm sure you got a lead on him there. All right, it's the G-Bag Nation here on a Christmas Eve, TD Tuesday. We have the Wooly Bully Top 10 list of the day in honor of it being December 4th, 2024. And with the recent passing of the great Ricky Henderson, we present the top 10 greatest athletes of all time who wore number 24. 877-881-1053. That's next.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right here on The Fan. All right, it's Christmas Eve 2024. We just lost the great Ricky Henderson. We have the Wooly Bully Top 10 list of the day, the best athletes all time who wore number 24 segment here in the nation. Of course, brought to you by Frankel & Frankel. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost with the Frankels. They only get paid when you win. Frankel & Frankel, the go-to car and truck attorneys in Dallas. Segment also brought to you by Soda State-of-the-Art Weight Loss and Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. Let's get to the list here before we bring in Mark Schlereth. Talk some NFL football with our good buddy Stink. Best athletes who wore number 24, Lucius Alexander. Who comes to mind?
Kobe.
Ding, ding, ding.
And
spoiler
also got
alert,
Jim,
number one.
Also, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I also have Jim Jackson here, too.
Love it.
Yeah, Jim Jackson, bro.
Jim Jackson has not been texted in yet. Kobe Bryant, of course, has. We have Bobby Jackson in the 214, Champ Bailey.
Yeah, I got Champ Bailey on the list, too. Absolutely.
That was one of the ones when I was thinking about this. I was like, Kobe, Champ Bailey, those ones were immediate. And then
Beast Mode.
Oh yeah, Marshawn Lynch. Yep. Good pull. Yes. I'll tell you what, this top 10, I don't know. It might not be. I mean, we'll see how it shakes out here. This is not me putting it together. This is America voting on it. Okay.
Jeff Gordon on that list?
Jeff Gordon is not in the top 10.
His car wore number 24.
That's true, famously.
Black SS with the navigation.
Yeah.
Yeah, he must be outside looking in here, unfortunately.
This is the nation did this?
Yeah, so this not, is the nation.
To me, like when I was growing up, Everson Walls wore 24.
Okay, yes. Yeah. No, he deserves the respect. Thank you.
Yeah.
You can give me all the old, the crusty pulls that you have from 2020, or from 24, the jersey number. Tom Chambers being texted in. He's outside looking in as well. Mark Aguirre being texted in. We have Robinson Cano being texted in. How about this one? You'll probably like
Mark
this.
Mark Aguirre. Yeah. Mark Aguirre. I was thinking of Mark McGuire.
No, he'd be in the top 10.
But see, that's what I'm saying. Mark McGuire wore 25.
Right.
That's what I was just like, whoa, what are we doing here?
How about a crusty Willie Wood nomination?
Willie Wood.
Willie Wood, yeah. Willie Wood was Green Bay Packers.
My man name was Willie Wood.
Willie Wood.
That's wild.
Yeah, Green Bay Packer dude. He was a corner. He was damn good.
48 interceptions.
Yes. Him and Dick Night Train Lane.
Get out of here, man. Stop. That's enough.
Yeah.
The Dick Law Willie Office Wood, of Willie
Dick Night Train. Stop,
Dick
bro,
Night Train
bro.
Lane. Detroit, stop, Detroit Lions.
Turn the mic off.
Man, these dudes had great nicknames, by the way, back in the day.
They did. Yeah, they really did.
Clyde Bulldog Turner.
Thought you was about to drop another one on me.
I think it was Bulldong.
Yeah, Bull balls.
Bull balls.
Manny Ramirez being texted in the 469. He's outside looking in as well. Ty Law. Really awesome corner for the Patriots for many years. Also outside looking in.
Ty Law was damn good.
Getting some, how about Darrell Revis?
Oh, Revis Island.
Revis Island was no joke, dude.
There was no barber on Revis Island.
Oh, was he famous for a poor haircut?
He's just awful haircut. Every time I see him, I'm like, damn, bro. You know you're going to be on TV every Sunday, right?
I do think of the beard being generally unkempt, so I guess that doesn't totally surprise me. Yeah. He's just a football guy.
Was his beard worse than Ed Reed?
Well, Ed Reed's was well groomed, even though it was
Ed Reed was looked unhoused at all times.
I felt like Ed Reed was always on the verge of like living out of his car.
Yeah. He still has the best Hall of Fame bust of all time. Yeah. Just a picture perfect copy and paste with the hair grown out a little bit, the beard grown out.
Yeah.
What a legend he was. Paul George being texted in. Mm. He did not crack the top 10. Barry Bonds getting some love, but he's also outside the top 10.
Whoa, Barry Bonds outside the
what?
Top?
Because
this
he was
a hate list.
He did most of his yeah. dominance was in the number 25, right, with the Giants because he changed his number to honor his dad.
Yeah.
So I think he was just 24 with the Pirates.
Yeah, but that the dude
which was still amazing.
That guy was an MVP without the when he was with the Pirates.
All fair.
Yeah.
Sam Jones also outside looking in. Now we get into the top 10.
Sam Jones. Is he the guy that's on the NBA network?
Yes.
Like he's always like, is he the guy that, the guy that, Lucy, she played a.
He had a Toxic Tuesday.
The Toxic Tuesday meltdown.
He was doxing that guy, right?
Remember that guy was watching his house?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, how about the place you got there in Florida, man?
Doing some pocket
watching. You can't be calling poverty out here. Yeah, you got a brand new house you're putting
Sam,
up.
Yeah. Like the guy was like calling him out for being like kind of a broke broadcaster.
Then he showed up at his house trying to do that little fake weird video to make good.
Yeah.
Hey, we're cool, right? Shake hands, man. Yeah. We're cool.
Forced and awkward. That was hilarious. Sam Jones. Outside looking in. All right, number 10, Champ Bailey. There he is.
There he is.
52 interceptions in his career.
Mm-hmm.
4 touchdowns. Would have been 5 had Benjamin Watson, the tight end of the Patriots, not chased him down 99 yards, I believe, in a playoff game at Mile High. And I think he fumbled it, went out of the end zone, and everything was going to be a 100-yard pick 6 on Brady.
How could you let
Ben Watson? Well, because he was kind of putting the brakes on it the final 20 yards. He thought it was an easy money touchdown.
No.
Here comes Ben Watson with a great hustle play. Would have been 5 total touchdowns there. Champ Bailey was a beast, though. Coming in at number 9, baseball's Lou Brock.
Oh, gosh. Why didn't I think of Lou Brock? I went to Cardinal games as a kid.
From 61 to 79, he was hitting dongs. 149 homers.
Stealing bases.
Yeah, 938 stolen bases.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson broke his record.
2-time World Series champion Lou Brock getting some love here.
19th.
Best athletes to ever wear number 24 in honor of Ricky Henderson and it being the 24th day of the final month of the year 2024. How about that? Rick Barry comes in at number 8.
Oh, geez. How'd I forget that guy?
He's got, I mean, his...
That's free throw line, right?
Free throw. The granny style.
Granny.
But he won with Golden State. I think Golden State's first championship was with him.
Yeah, he's an NBA champion for sure. Yeah. Finals MVP, all that stuff. 8-time All-Star.
Him and Al Addles.
Yeah, I'm surprised nobody's adopted the granny shot free throw from him.
Some of these dudes need to. I'm telling you, you could be embarrassed, but as long as you're making them, so what? You look worse clanking them.
Yeah, when you get above like 6'10", you cannot shoot a free throw.
No.
6'8", 6'10", it starts getting weird.
Yeah.
972 texting in Charles Woodson. How about that, Broadus?
Oh, jeez. Gosh.
Missed that one. Yeah. Another 972.
Brown. I think Willie Brown for the Raiders.
Willie Brown was on the list.
Yeah.
Outside looking
in.
Oh,
you said that already?
I don't know if I said it, but I saw
Willie
it.
Willie Brown. Yeah, it was good.
Marion the Barbarian. RIP from the 972. Yes, sir. He wore that like a beast. Tough guy. Okay, we continue here. Number 7, Miguel Cabrera. He, of course, 470 home runs, ridiculous, 11-time All-Star, World Series champion. I believe David Sampson, who was an executive for the Marlins for a long time, deemed him the best player he ever had on one of his teams in terms of playing with a hangover. Miguel Cabrera.
Really?
He'd go tear it up next day.
Babe Ruth.
Dong.
Babe Ruth would like a word with you. Like that.
Well, this is just for
Dennis Rodman,
Samson.
Too, by the way.
Dennis Rodman, yeah.
Actually, Ricky Henderson comes in at number six.
Oh, okay.
1,406 stolen bases. Rest in peace to the legend. 10-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion. ALCS MVP. Number five, we have Moses Malone.
Jeez.
The 76er, number 24.
Yeah.
Average 20-12. He's an NBA champion, finals MVP, and a 3-time NBA MVP. It's a heck of a career. Charles Woodson comes in at number four.
Yep. Lost my job because of him.
65 interceptions, dude.
Yeah.
And 11 touchdowns. Of course, a Super Bowl champion as well.
Would you say he was trash or something, Broadus? Like, no. Skip that guy.
No. I tried to get Parcells.
He's got an attitude problem.
I tried to get Parcells to sign him, and he said exactly what you said about him.
Really?
That's what Parcells, he said, I don't want that malcontent playing on my field.
That malcontent.
That's what he called him. Called him a malcontent, and I fought him on it, and he'd had enough of me. He decided to get rid of me after that. He did not want to argue with me.
How dare that brother try to talk some sense into me? Get him out of here.
No, seriously. He convinced Jerry, and the sad thing about it was, you know, he gets rid of me, and then 2 years later, he's gone. So, like, it's not like he stayed another 8-10 years and kept coaching. Like, he got rid of me, and then he was gone himself. So, that was sad.
Legendary Willie Mays comes in at number three.
Say hey!
My gosh.
One of the greatest catches of all time. Down to the polo ground.
How many All-Star appearances? Anybody know?
How many years did he play?
Well, he played many years.
Okay, well, you don't know. See, I was
51-73. He had 24 All-Star appearances.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to do the math, and like, every year. I was going to give it, yeah.
Ken Griffey Jr., hello, number two.
Mazur Jr., better player.
Well, I guess America has spoken. Ken Griffey Jr., he's number two. And number one, of course, the Black Mamba, Kobe Bryant.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the jump. 24 day. That's right. Kobe got texted in a ton, and that's well-deserved. Willie Mays, of course,
Jeff Gordon. I didn't
see Jeff Gordon on there, man. I'm sorry to say that.
Yeah, that.
All right, football's finest top of the hour. Let's go ahead and talk some football with Mark Schlereth next year on The Fan. All right, let's go to the D&M Leasing Hotline. Welcome in our football buddy, Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL Insider, brought to you by Hellman's Mayonnaise Mayo Game Day. Be delicious. Merry Christmas, Mark. Thanks for giving us some time, man. How the heck are you?
I'm good, man. Merry Christmas to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm curious how much stinking good green chili sauce you hand out as presents this time of year.
Well, you know what? We eat plenty, but I'm stuck here in New York with my wife, and my whole family's back in Colorado. So I will miss Christmas Day, but we're pushing it back a couple days. So Friday I'll head back out to Colorado to go see my family. But they got plenty out, and they've got gifted plenty for me on my behalf.
Hey, Stink, the fact that you've been in the NFL so long, and then your media stuff. Do you ever celebrate holidays? I mean, on time, actual holidays on the day of.
Well, it just depends. I mean, when it's a football season, it's a football season, right?
Right.
So I'm so used to, as a player, practicing on Thanksgiving and then, that day being a work day. And same thing with Christmas when it falls. So it just is one of those things where you just get used to saying, hey, I can't be there this year, so we're going to have to push it back. And you get used to that. That's just part of the program, whether it's television, whether it's, you're playing. It's just part of the what you have to do sometimes.
Former NFL offensive lineman Mark Schlereth with us here on The Fan. This time of year, we see the quarterbacks gifting their offensive linemen all sorts of awesome Christmas presents. Who did it better? Was it Pat Mahomes with his Yeti cooler filled with a bunch of cool stuff, or was it Joe Burrow with the samurai swords?
The samurais are whatever. They're great, I guess, but I don't know. I mean, a bunch of offensive linemen to get together and have their O-line party and start having a couple of drinks, and the next thing you know, there's a sword fight going on. That's how O-linemen play. So I like all the stuff that Mahomes gave out. We used to get, like, Elway used to just give us, like, he would write us a check as an offensive line. So he'd cut us, like, a 10 grand check and go, we'd go to have our offensive. He wasn't invited to the offensive line party.
Right.
But, like, that's what we used to do. But, I mean, I've gotten Rolexes from Mark Rippon and Terrell Davis and, I've gotten some good gifts over the course of my career, but well, I tell you what, it's kind of crazy right now. Brock Purdy getting everybody to Toyota Tacomas.
And yeah.
Sequoias. I mean, like, hey, man, it made me want to come back and play.
I was just wondering, like, when you were in Colorado there, Snake, did you ever think about, like, would a snowmobile been a really good gift for you?
For me, no, because I wasn't going up to the mountains to, you know, to ride a snowmobile. Like, yeah. Denver's such a high-altitude desert that, like, most of our rain and most of our snow comes in, like, April.
Okay.
Like, you don't get a lot in Denver, believe it or not. So, you know, you have to take it up to the mountains. So, no, I would not. Plus, man, at that point in my life, I grew up skiing. I grew up doing all that stuff.
Sure.
My knees were so shot that I just quit doing all those things, all the mountain stuff. Mm-hmm. I just never went up to the mountains.
Well, I just saw you talk about that altitude, and obviously playing up there for years, living there now, you get more accustomed to it. But I saw the Colts going into Mile High a couple of weeks ago, their head coach talking about beet juice being one of the things that they're trying to consume to help them deal with the altitude. What's the craziest thing you've heard of people doing trying to acclimate themselves?
Oh, they come a day early, you know, drink a bunch of water. Like, if you go into Mile High Stadium, it's really cool. Like, everywhere you go, especially around the visitors, they've got signs and they've got, like, like, hydration signs and the importance of drinking water and what the altitude does and altitude sickness and, hey, 5280, it's a mile up, it's real, you know. It's plastered all over the place where the visiting team walks in and out. Everywhere around their locker room, all the way out to the field, it's a reminder that it's really hard to play in altitude. So it's really funny to see it, you know, as you walk in there as a broadcaster. It's not anything I ever paid attention to as a player, but it's funny. And ultimately, I think the science behind it is truly like beet juice. That's comical to me. is, you know, it just takes your body is 6 weeks to produce enough oxygen-carrying blood cells, like red blood cells. Like, it just, your body produces more so that you can deal with the thin air. You can't do it in a day, and you can't do it by drinking beet juice from water. So, you know, you just got to deal with it. It's truly a home field advantage.
All right, let's talk some ball here. Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth with us here on The Fan, brought to you by Hellman's Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. You know, one of the interesting teams right now in the NFC is the Vikings. Sam Darnold doing what he's doing. What should the Vikings do here? They draft J.J. McCarthy. He'll be bouncing back from injury next year. How should they handle that quarterback situation?
Unknown commodity versus known commodity. Mm. I know what Sam Darnold is. I watched it all season long. And by the way, you know, he actually took a pay cut and agreed to be a backup quarterback in San Francisco so he could learn what it's like to play in the National Football League. Mm. And so he did it the right way. I don't know what J.J. McCarthy is. They don't know what McCarthy is. By the way, I don't know how that knee is going to respond to that surgery. So, like, to me, it's a no-brainer. You figure out a deal with Sam Darnold,
yeah,
and you get it signed. Like, you already know the guy's played exceptional football, and I know they've got a ton of weapons and they're really good, but man, his ability to execute that offense, his ability to find open receivers, the throw he made to Justin Jefferson for a touchdown, away from the safety, back shoulder, on the move, getting
nasty.
Hit. Mm. Like, it was phenomenal, and he's done it all season long. So, to me, I know what I have. I know what Sam Darnold is. I don't know what J.J. McCarthy is. So, I'm going with the known commodity. That's just the way I operate.
Stink, a lot of us here, you know, even in Dallas who covered the team, we didn't have the Cowboys beat in Tampa Bay, you know, on Sunday Night Football. Kind of talk about, though, how you look at that, the NFC South there with Atlanta and then also then with Tampa. That's just, like, it seemed like to me a really a terrible loss for the Buccaneers.
Certainly was, but I would point to Dallas, and I think I talked to you guys maybe 4 weeks ago,
yeah,
when I said I'd retain Mike McCarthy.
Yep, sure did.
And, you know, it's interesting now to watch that team play, to watch the effort that they give, and let's face it, like, the last couple of weeks it was their ability to run the ball.
Yeah.
They didn't run the ball for 2 inches in that game. And they still found a way to win that ball game And, you know, you're doing it with Cooper Rush, and you're doing it with – like it's really interesting to watch it all transpire because, you know, over the last 5 weeks or so, that offensive line has played better. They've had more continuity. They've run the ball, albeit not last week, but they've run the ball better. Defensively, they're playing better. And, like, I look at all that stuff, and, you know, you can poo-poo it, or you can say, hey, Mike McCarthy hasn't had great playoff success. You can look at all that stuff and say, yeah, I get it. But I guess my perspective from that being, you know, being in the NFL for a long time, my perspective for as a player is, dude, we're the ones that go out and play. Like, we're the ones that have to go out there and execute. And we put it all on the coach, like, oh, he didn't game plan well. Or we did. No, bottom line is oftentimes it's us as players. And I always say this, nobody, and I mean nobody, buys a ticket to watch Mike McCarthy stand around his ass off. Nobody. They come to watch the players play, and it is our team. And if we don't execute well, then guess what? We're not going to win. So I look at that stuff maybe a little bit differently. I think Mike McCarthy's a hell of a football coach. And I think the way the Dallas Cowboys are playing right now says to me that, you know, what I said to you guys 4 or 5 weeks ago was right. Like, they're playing hard for him, and he's a damn good football coach, and they've done it with limited talent. So that's just me. You know, that probably means they'll go on and get a young coach that's never done it before, and they'll get all excited because, you know, he's an offensive genius or guru, and, you know, you'll be right back into, you know, out of the frying pan into the fryer.
Well, Mark, we love you, man. We can't thank you enough for the time. Merry Christmas to you, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Yes, sir. There he goes. Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL Insider, brought to you by Hellman's Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. The quote of fans don't pay to watch Mike McCarthy stand around his ass off. I liked that. That was. I think we could montage a good 5 or 6 minutes worth of stink from this year. He's got at least one line every week that is just fantastic. Always appreciate it. All right, it's a TD Tuesday here, Christmas Eve. Great to have you in the G-Bag Nation. Brian Broaddus, myself, Eric Chiafalo, Lucius Alexander, hanging with you until 7 o'clock. Football's finest. Who had John Gruden feeling nicey in Week 16?